Chapter 26 Chamber.
I'm sorry, but what exactly do you mean by not this time?
She smiled, and here I want to say this was probably the first moment in which Udo realized he was not being given a chance to refuse. It was more like he was being given the opportunity to make peace with the situation.
She said, "You've been different from the start. Whenever this process was carried out before, a candidate was selected, brought straight away to a place very much like this, and made ready through certain ceremonies. Once finished, the candidate would be transferred into a new body, one capable of merging with a god."
She reached out and tapped the diamond stud upon his hand with a fingertip.
"You see the difference? They're brought here and placed into a new body. You've been living in such a body now well over a year, and, more importantly, An is not the first god to have looked within you."
"So you've done something to me," he said.
"Well, we've discussed that already. But apart from that, I've also hidden something within you, something to protect against eradication."
"What is it?"
"I cannot tell you."
"Why?"
"Because then you would know about it and he would see it immediately."
"He? You mean, Godan?"
She nodded.
"As you think of Mia's mother, grant me the trust she failed to earn. You will merge twice. The first time, An will look inside of you and judge your suitability. When he finds you adequate, a certain awakening will take place. You will be expanded and given to know many things. Then, when you've recovered, you'll be allowed to put any remaining affairs in order. Select a twin world system."
"Select a world?"
"Worlds always come in pairs. They must spin against each other. All of this will become quite clear."
"What am I selecting them for?"
"Well, you wouldn't be much of a god without your own world, would you?"
Udo leaned forward, rested his head in his hands.
"Why is it that I become more confused with each new thing I learn?"
"Hey,"
she whispered. When she brushed his calf with the top of her foot, he looked up.
"It is a great deal to absorb, and you have time to take it in. This won't be immediate. There are still preparations to make."
As she finished speaking, the light flickered, failed, and then returned.
"What in the hell's name was that?" he asked.
"Some of the preparations. As I said, the ship's systems are being brought back online for you. It has been a rather long time since anyone has come this way, even a demigod."
Udo perked up at this.
"Now that's the second time you've used that word, ship. What do you mean?"
"This place, the diaspora, is a ship, isn't it? What is a ship? It's a vessel meant to carry cargo over a certain distance. Well, that is the diaspora, a vessel meant to carry humanity through time and chaos."
"And the gods built it?"
She didn't answer. She only looked at him for a few moments without expression. To Udo, it seemed almost as if she'd fallen asleep with her eyes open, which for him was just fine. He quite enjoyed looking into her eyes. When she finally responded, her voice startled him.
"I'm going to make you a promise now. You haven't asked me to do so, but I will anyway. I will not lie to you. That's a human thing to say, is it not? Others might have said as much to you in your lifetime, and for them it might have meant something. In our case, consider this a covenant entered into by a god, a thing which may not be violated. And for your end, your requirement is nothing. I give to you the word of a god, which you will soon learn is an unbreakable thing, never to lie or deceive you, either by speech or omission, but dutifully speak nothing but truth from this time forward. The only limitation I'll reserve is the right not to answer if I think the truth dangerous or harmful to you in some way."
"I had believed as much before you said so," he shrugged.
"Yes, but now I have said so. You might learn to doubt me in time,
I'd sooner doubt myself.
She waved him off. That is meaningless. People doubt themselves all the time. He thought on that, then nodded.
All right.
The point, Udo, is that I've said it. Words don't mean much to humans, and so they shouldn't. Humans break oaths and lie to each other all the time. A healthy skepticism is critical to your survival. But pretty soon you will learn. You'll learn that a covenant entered into by a god has real teeth. To dissolve it, you'd have to dissolve the god itself.
All right. And even so, I believe you. So, as to my question, the gods, you built this ship?
I'm not going to answer that at this time.
Yeah, fine then.
As I said, there's a good reason.
Sure. I'll understand eventually, he interrupted.
She watched him for a while, but he would say nothing more.
I'm going to leave you to think on this now, she said.
Oh, I just sit around in here, he said, looking about the chamber.
No, there is something you must do. Soon this room's recording systems will be functional, but until then...
She walked to the door, which opened as soon as she approached. When she stepped through, it closed. He sat there, alone, listening to the silence of that place. It was absolute. Normally, he should have heard other things. The sigh of the wind, the trickle of water, perhaps the cry of some distant animal, or if he was in a city, the bustle of society. People shouting and laughing, babies crying, the clopping of hooves, the many coughs, sniffles, and sneezes, the creaking of old carpentry. In the chamber, there was only the sounds of his breathing, his heart, and the low hissing ring of ears which had too little to do. Then the door opened again, and she returned with a white block of slate and a stick. She placed these down upon the table and gestured to him.
Come over, she said. I have something to show you.
He sat on the chair when she pointed at it. Then, with one slender finger, she brushed the top of the slate, and a single layer as fine as a baby's hair peeled away and settled upon the surface before him. For a moment, he could only stare. When he pressed his own finger against the surface, its smoothness reminded him of glass. But he was able to flex it when he picked it up. It bent easily, and he thought it might be possible to fold, but could not bring himself to try. He couldn't imagine marring that perfect surface.
This is some sort of parchment? He asked.
Paper. It's made from stone.
He held it up to the light.
Stone?
What else would it be? Have you seen any plants or animals since you left the worlds of man?
No, I suppose I haven't. What am I to do with this?
She handed him the small stick and said,
You must record the story of your life. Everything. As much as you can remember.
Why?
He asked. He touched his tongue to the side of the stick, but tasted nothing. It was likewise odorless.
Because you're going to need it after the first merge. You'll be a stranger to yourself for a while. Having this to review will help to remind you. I do apologize for the need to write it out physically, but as I said, the recording systems will soon be functional. Once they are, you may forgo the writing.
I'm sorry, Mother, I am not lettered.
Take that quill and write your name. Do it now without thinking.
The compulsion to obey her was gone. He could sense it was no longer within him, but he understood she was trying to show him something. He did as she commanded, and then looked down at the sheet, saw the letters scrawled upon it. U-D-O. It was a language he'd never before encountered. He read it easily.
Why do I know how to do that? He muttered.
She placed her hand over the back of his and said,
Consider it something of a gift. In the process of unwinding the snares I'd left within your mind, I added one thing only. This new thing. The ability to have a voice beyond speech.
She removed her hand and kissed him upon the brow.
I'm going to leave you to this for a while now. Your needs will be seen to. I'll return from time to time to see that you're well. But for now...
She pointed at the desk and then turned to exit the chamber.
When will you be back? He asked.
Not long from now. If you need me sooner, call my name. I'll hear you.
That made him feel better. He nodded to her, then had another thought. He blurted it out before she was halfway through the door.
How long have I been here?
Longer than you realize.
Then the door hissed closed. She was gone again. He stared at the paper. The paper stared back at him. It did not seem impressed.
Right, as much as I can remember.
He looked at his name scrawled across the top of the page. That part seemed better. There were at least some markings. It wasn't an unbroken plane. He didn't know if he could have dealt with a pure white field. He picked up the writing stick, the quill, she'd called it, though there was no feather. He wondered about that. Had she called it a quill because that was its proper name, or because she thought it was a name he understood? He experimented with different grips, clutched it in a fist, stuck it between his knuckles, cupped it in the hollow of his fingers like a dagger.
How the fuck am I supposed to hold you? He muttered.
The quill stared back at him. Like the paper, it did not seem impressed. Udo sighed and set it down on the table. Then he stared at his name again.
Write your name without thinking, huh?
He turned in the chair, looking away from the paper. He let his eyes play over the chamber's interior, the featureless gray walls, couch, bed, soft lighting. About as much effort had been given to decorating this place as he'd devoted to his own shack back in Erda. He suspected this new chamber enclosed a larger space than had the shack and thought it strange that the larger of the two should feel so oppressive. The chamber was nearly suffocating when he paid attention. Suddenly he spun around, snatched up the quill, and scribbled his name a second time, directly below the first. Then he looked closely at his hand, studying the way the quill was gripped between the fingers. It seemed familiar. He was sure he must have seen others hold a writing implement just so in his life, though he never gave it much attention. He could see why they held it so. It was quite comfortable. He looked back at the paper, said,
"All right, everything I can remember."
The paper stared back at him. It showed no signs of offering any suggestions. He continued to look at it until his eyes watered. He rubbed them and cursed and threw down the quill. He went to the couch and sat down. Sometime later, the door opened. A tray, laden with water and some sort of food, floated into the room at chest height and settled onto the table beside the stack of paper. It was strange. He didn't feel particularly hungry, but at the same time, he also couldn't remember the last time he'd taken nourishment. There certainly hadn't been any food in hell. Thinking back, the only thing of worth that had really passed through his lips was the water Irpisha had provided. He went to examine the tray. The water was simply water. The food, spread out in a thin layer over the plate, was a green mush that reminded him of pond scum. For a moment he just stared at it, wondering what he was expected to do. It was on a plate, but they surely didn't expect him to eat it. He didn't think he could without being sick all over the floor. The stack of paper beckoned from the corner of his eye. He pushed it to the edge of the table, where it would be harder to see. There was a metal spoon beside the plate. He picked it up and dragged it through the mush. It squelched wetly as it separated, and he shivered.
"They're trying to poison me," he said.
He used the spoon to gather it all into a pile and then stabbed the spoon into the center. When he let it go, it sagged slowly to the left, fell over, and clinked onto the edge of the plate.
"Well, if I wasn't hungry before, I'm certainly not hungry now."
He glanced at the paper, then back at the mush. Then he looked at the paper again.
"Fuck yourself," he advised.
He picked up the spoon, scooped up a dollop of mush, and smelled it. He screwed up his face when he did this, fully expecting his stomach to turn, but it didn't. For a moment, he didn't even realize what he'd smelled. Certainly not the rotted filth he'd expected. He smelled it again. What in the... mutton? He touched it experimentally with the tip of his tongue. No, beef or something. He smelled it again. What is that? He hissed. Something wet fell upon the back of his hand. It was thick, but clear like water. He felt a cold line along his chin and swiped at it with a hand. He realized he was salivating.
What is this? He whispered.
Then, fully prepared to spit it back onto the plate, Udo shoved the spoon into his mouth, squeezed his eyes shut, and waited. A few seconds later, his eyes opened. They were astonished. He began to shovel as much of the stuff into his mouth as he could get onto the spoon, and when the spoon was no longer adequate, he licked his plate. From the side of the table, the paper watched him. He'd discovered the chamber pot, a small seat hidden behind the wall between the bed and couch that seemed to appear only when needed, and had devoured four more meals before Irpisha returned. The room chimed as it had before, but it took Udo a few seconds to realize what the sound meant. He'd only heard the sound one other time when she was with him. The food that came after simply entered without hesitation. The chime sounded again a moment later. It startled him, and he blurted, "Come in!" She was still wearing the melam as well as the same body beneath it. He thought her hair might be thicker, but assumed his eyes were playing tricks on him. He watched her sit down on the couch, arrange her long legs just so. His eyes followed the line of her calf to the hollow of the knee.
"You seem preoccupied," she teased.
"I was just thinking."
"About?"
"I was thinking there was a time when staring at your leg like this would have crumpled me into a quivering half-man. I can look now. That much has changed. But I still feel it. Right here."
He pointed toward his stomach.
"Shame?"
"Yes." She nodded.
"I'm sorry for that. It's a hard thing to unwind. I think you must have me confused between a mother figure and an object of physical desire."
Udo quivered and looked away.
"Yeah, that would do it."
"You needn't feel that way."
He winced and resisted the urge to meet her gaze.
"Have you not said that I am your son?"
She sighed.
"Yes, of course I have. But I think you fail to understand that a god for a mother is a far different thing from the human variety. I am essentially the mother of all humanity. But you and I don't share the same blood, of course. It is perfectly natural for you, a healthy adult male, to look at this body in such a way, and you needn't be concerned about any cultural taboos."
"Please, please, just stop."
She shook her head.
"There's been quite a bit of damage done to you, Udo, long before I ever found you on that mountain. Sometimes I really do wish I could get in there and wipe it away. But then if I did, you would not be Udo."
I think Udo must have grunted here. She was making it very difficult for him to say anything at all.
"Perhaps it would make things easier if you and I just made love here, right in this bed?"
He was up and pacing in an instant, shaking his hands until the joints ached.
"Please, no more."
"Hmm,"
she hummed.
"I suspected there might be work to do. You should be thankful that what lies ahead does not require us to copulate."
He cringed away from her.
All right, I promise to stop now. I do thank you, though. This will make me smile in those interminable, boring moments in which I lie around, waiting in vain for the story of Udo."
She glanced at the blank stack of papers and tisked. Udo deflated onto the bed.
"I know. I'm sorry. I can't write anything. Not a goddamn thing except my name. It seems to be the only thing I can get onto the page. Here, look at this."
He removed a sheet from the bottom of the stack and held it out to her. She took it from him and began to read aloud.
"Udo, Udo, Udo, Udo. My, my. Well, at least you've gotten some practice in. I see your penmanship is improving.
He scoffed and rolled his eyes.
I'm relieved to learn you're not angry, but I really don't know what to do here. I feel like I'd have better luck diving through my own asshole than getting anything of use onto that fucking stack.
You're being too hard on yourself, Udo. You're not the first person to wrestle with writer's block, trust me.
Writers?
It's an antiquated term people once used to describe a lack of drive, creativity, or organization. It all amounts to the same thing. You're stuck, Udo, and you have no idea how to get unstuck.
I think that's one of the few things you've told me that I already knew, he sighed.
Yes, but easy enough to solve. Sometimes you can't just drive headlong into a task. Every so often you need to fall into it, or maybe back into it is a better usage.
I don't know what that means.
Of course you don't, but I'll help you. Here, take up that quill. He did. Now, she said, why don't we try writing this out as a conversation? Your name is already on the page, so we won't bother with that. When were you born?
He thought about that.
I don't really know.
No. Write it down.
Write it down?
The answer. Write down your answer on the page.
Oh, right.
No. I mean, write it down fully.
He looked at the paper, then at her. She said,
you only wrote, I don't really know.
Yeah.
Well, if someone read that, would they know what you're talking about?
No.
She crossed her arms and nodded at the page. After staring at it a moment, he wrote, I don't really know how old I am.
There, see? She smiled. Now you've written something beyond your name.
Good, he muttered.
He was staring at the words.
They seemed very strange.
Why don't you know when you were born? She asked.
Well, my mother, that is, my first mother, dumped me off with this smith out in the trade district. This was back in Colmar.
Udo?
Yeah?
She gestured at the paper again.
Oh, shit. Right. Sorry.
I don't really know how old I am. My mother dumped me off on a smith out in Colmar's trade district when I was very young. I guess she must have been a whore or something. Whatever it was, she probably couldn't feed the both of us and so had to be rid of me. This was common to do. As I grew older, others like me were brought to the shop, all very young, with much the same story. I always just assumed my story matched theirs. There, she laughed. Look what you just did there. You'll be producing reams in no time.
What is a ream? He asked.
Never you mind. Keep going.
All right. Well,
he looked at the paper, but nothing else happened.
What was life in the smithy like? She tried.
He put the quill down.
No, she asked.
No.
All right, that's fine. How about after Colmar? What did you do when you left Colmar?
I learned to dig.
She pointed again at the paper. Udo rolled his eyes and picked up the quill.